You're listening to Startup Nation Radio on News Talk 760 WJR. Here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, this week, Jeff Sloan's going to be the host of the Startup Nation show. Great show ahead. This is the show for you to learn about how to start and grow your own business. Well, listen, have you ever whined about how tough it is to start a business of your own? Maybe you don't have enough money. Maybe you don't have the knowledge. Well, listen, we're going to learn today about how a $100 microloan, I said $100 microloan with a little support and knowledge, is helping people start businesses in places and in ways you can't even imagine. Stick with us on this edition of Startup Nation Radio. Great show ahead.
You're listening to Startup Nation Radio on News Talk 760 WJR.
Okay, welcome to this great edition of Startup Nation Radio. Actually, today, Jeff Sloan is going to lead as host of Startup Nation Radio. We're also going to have our good friend and co-host, but this time on the phone, Norm Pappas will be joining us as well to help guide us through the show, bring some great wisdom like he always does. And speaking of Pappas Financial, great sponsor of Startup Nation Radio, Pappas Financial has been a trusted advisor to business owners for over 40 years. They guide entrepreneurs on strategies that protect their businesses and personal assets, implement company benefit solutions, and provide a roadmap for businesses to set their succession plans and investment strategies. Get started right and stay on track. To help you do just that, get Pappas Financial on your team. Reach out to Norm and his team at 248-539-8292 and tell them Startup Nation sent you. Well, we got into the introduction earlier, before I bring Norm on, about how a $100 microloan and a little bit of support, some knowledge, some support that goes with that, can actually change people's lives, change families' lives, even change communities. It's a powerful thing. It demonstrates the power of entrepreneurship. And on this edition of Startup Nation Radio, we're going to feature that story. We're going to feature it also as part of a broader discussion today on nonprofit organizations. Now, that may seem like a bit of an oxymoron, but nonprofits have to be run using the same principles that for-profit enterprises use to be successful. We're going to talk about that. We've got a guy who knows a thing or two about running a nonprofit organization. Norm Pappas, glad you're with me here, even though it's by phone. It's not as good as when you're in the studio, but always great to have you, Norm. Welcome to the show.
Oh, glad to be available.
All right. Well, I know you're down in, you're in sunny Florida, right, Norm?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Well, it's wonderful for you. Instead of being on the beach working on your tan, it's great to have you join us on the radio. We appreciate you taking the time.
Well, this is an interesting show today and a good subject.
It really is. And Norm, you've run, you know a thing or two about nonprofits. You've run one yourself, or more than one, Norm?
Yeah. I have my own, but I've been involved in the various charities and communities. And, you know, nonprofits are really a big business today. Very professional people are running and working in the nonprofit world.
Right. And again, it seems like it may be odd that on the Startup Nation radio show, a show focused on making money through a successful business venture, that we would focus on nonprofits. But here's the thing. We get a lot of people contacting us, asking us for help with their nonprofit organizations. And Norm, you know, I know, you've got to put the same basic principles of marketing and good financial management and raising money, all of those, you know, and many more, but many, you know, creating the awareness and getting the message out. Those are the same fundamentals that we would use in a for-profit business, but they have to be used in a nonprofit as well.
Yeah, sometimes even more critical, because you can't just increase your revenue exponentially. You know, business owners are really involved in nonprofits. As they become successful, they serve on boards, they want to give back to the community, and so you have a lot of interaction between business owners and the nonprofit world and professionals.
Right, and let's just break it down here. When we talk nonprofits, really just to make it clear that there really isn't that much difference between running a nonprofit and a for-profit. There's obviously a critical difference, but it doesn't really change that much the way these things need to be operated. So the essential difference is you're not in business, if you will, to distribute, for the purpose of distributing profits back to the shareholders. That's, you know, in a broadest sense, what a for-profit entity is all about. In the nonprofit world, you're really the objective. I was going to say you're in business, but the objective is to achieve the mission. So if whatever that mission of that nonprofit may be, that's the objective. And instead of paying profits out to shareholders, you're really representing those who donate money, provide the capital through their charitable contributions to the organization. Those are the stakeholders that in this case don't worry about getting profits back or return on investment. They're focused on a return on investment of a different kind. Instead of financially, they're looking at it as a way to get the satisfaction, the psychic return on investment that comes with seeing an important mission they feel really, really strongly about getting achieved.
Yeah, and your point about they're running a business. You have payroll, you know, you have healthcare costs, you have all of the things that the for-profit have, and in some ways it's more difficult because you're limited as to your decision-making ability with the revenue stream and boards.
Right, and so you we have these unique challenges, and you know, is there the key thing to make a nonprofit go? I mean, you've got to have a great mission. It's got to be tight. You've got to have a good organization, but you've got to access the capital, right? I mean, you still, yep. And in this case, it's through donations and charitable contributions and so on, as opposed to raising investment dollars, either privately or publicly. What, you know, are there essential differences in the way you reach out from your perspective, having been in both the for-profit world and the not-for-profit world, in the way you go about approaching people to put up the capital you need to make it go?
Well, a lot of times the donors are pursuing a legacy they want to leave or something that's important to them, as opposed to purely, you know, here's my return on my money. So it's the appealing to the legacy and getting them involved in, you know, as big a way as they would do, because there's unlimited needs that the various institutions, charities, and nonprofits have.
Yeah. This is an interesting question, but I have found this to be true, and I wonder if you have too. And here's why it's interesting. If I were to go to someone and ask them to invest in a business, and this particular person has lots of resources at their fingertips, lots of money, lots of capital they could deploy, many times I find if I were to say to them, you can invest in this business and get a return, a financial return on your investment, in some cases that can be more challenging when approaching a wealthy person, an angel in the venture world, what we call it. Sometimes it's easier to get them to listen and cough up the money if you're going after something that tugs at their heartstrings, that's important to them, as you say, from a legacy perspective. It can be even easier to get the money as long as your message is compelling and as long as the organization has a good likelihood in their eyes of achieving the objective they feel so strongly about being part of. Do you find that, Norm?
Absolutely. And, you know, what's really key is to who the leaders are of the nonprofits. You're getting great talent, people that used to be in business coming back to this world, because they can articulate the needs and ask for the money.
Well, you teed up our next segment perfectly. We're going to talk to someone who's done just that, gone from the for-profit world to the not-for-profit world, providing great leadership to a really worthy organization. Stick with us. We're going to learn from him how he's making it all work.
Welcome back to Startup Nation on WJR. Here's Jeff Sloan.
All right, welcome back to Startup Nation Radio, the show for you to learn about how to start and grow your own business. Today's show brought to you by Walsh College, Comerica Bank, and Pappas Financial. I've got my good friend, Norm Pappas, on the show, co-hosting with me today. Norm, welcome back.
Yeah.
Joining us by phone today. Thanks for calling in, Norm.
Glad to be here.
Always good to have you. And I know this show is something that's something you know specifically something about because you've been in the business world a long time, but you've also run a nonprofit of your own. You've got your own foundation, Norm, right?
Right.
Amazing. So you bring good experience, good wisdom to the show, as you always do. We're lucky to have you. Thanks for joining us. All right. Now, Norm, we've got a great, great story ahead. You know, we talk to people about starting a business in the for-profit world. We talk about, you know, the challenges of getting a business plan together, the challenges of raising the money. And some people say, oh, $5,000 is not enough, $10,000 is not enough, $50,000, I can't start a business with that. We're going to tell you about a story. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And all these people that we talk to here in our backyard through Startup Nation Radio, not only do they have capital available to them, not only do they have all the knowledge they could possibly ever want to garner available at their fingertips, not only do they have a support network of friends, mentors, people in the community that can help you get your business rolling, the great marketplace in the USA right in your backyard, all of those things, a great patent and intellectual property system that facilitate the startup of business. What about people who make about a dollar a day that can't even feed their family. They don't even know really what for profit. Are you kidding me? For profit? I mean, but those people are starting micro enterprises, and they're doing it in communities and in areas that are impoverished and challenged. I mean, patent system, forget patent system. They're worried about where their meal's going to come from for their child that afternoon. And those people are starting businesses and changing their lives and changing their communities as a result. And they're doing it led by an organization called Trickle Up. And Trickle Up, now led since 2005, has been led by someone from the for-profit world who's moved over to the nonprofit world, William Abrams. Welcome to Startup Nation Radio.
Thank you, Norm. It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, this is Jeff, and we've also got Norm on the show. William, you moved out of the for-profit world. You had a great career, senior executive, a journalist for the New York Times, ABC News, Wall Street Journal, on and on and on. Amazing. You moved out of the for-profit world. What drew you? What compelled you to go over to the not-for-profit world and throw your talents in that arena?
Well, it started with a single phone call. A friend of mine who runs a nonprofit here in New York City called Bowery Residence Committee. It works with the homeless. We were talking, and he said, "What are you doing in the rest of your career? And I think your talents would be very marketable and useful in the nonprofit sector." So that one phone conversation changed my life. I was at a point where I was thinking about what to do next, and the idea really struck me, and I started looking around and found my way to Trickle Up. So that's my story in a nutshell after 30 years or more working in the media business, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, ABC News.
Amazing pedigree. And now, and so Trickle Up, it really is an amazing organization. We've actually followed it through Startup Nation for a long time now, and had the founders on the air roughly 10 years ago. Incredible. So tell us the mission of Trickle Up.
The mission of Trickle Up is very simple. We are here to help women who live in some of the poorest places on the planet start a business as a way to move out of poverty for themselves and their families. We help them learn business skills. We help them, obviously, earn more money, grow their profits, help them plan for the future. Financial planning is part of what we do. Strategic planning sounds very fancy for someone living in a poor rural village, but it's just as important for them as it is for Google. And we help them save and think about how they're going to acquire capital in the future and how they're going to diversify and how they're going to grow.
And you heard a little bit about, you know, as we were coming into this segment, me making commentary on, you know, here in the U.S., we might complain about not enough capital at $5,000 or $10,000 to start a business, whatever it may be. You know, I mean, how can this work? Does this work? This is amazing stuff. You provide a $100 micro loan, some support. Does this really work? And give us some examples of how it is working.
Sure. We make it work anywhere from 8,000 to 10,000 times a year. That's the number of women we're able to help support, start businesses, save, plan for the future. We work in places like rural India, Guatemala, Nicaragua, in West Africa, in Mali and Burkina Faso, and more recently working in refugee camps with the UN in Egypt and in Costa Rica and Ecuador. So we're working with people who start with very little. They have very little money. Usually they don't even have a productive asset, maybe a piece of food processing equipment or any kind of capital. Animals usually don't own land, but they've got a tremendous amount of determination. They want to have more money. They want to do better for their families. That's the big motivator. It's all about children. And so we provide business training, very basic things. We provide small seed capital grants. So think of Trickle Up like venture capitalists. They're not even loans at this point. We're just investing in people's ideas and energy. And then we help them with follow-on coaching and also helping them form savings groups, 15 or 20 women who are meeting every week, starting to save small amounts of money, learning from each other. They're learning as much as our training is valuable. What women and what our entrepreneurs teach each other is every bit as valuable. And the kind of businesses that we help start are the most basic businesses that exist. So usually there are products that are people sell in their village or maybe in a nearby town. It can be weaving in Guatemala. It can be small trading in Burkina Faso, buying rice in 100-pound bags and processing, cooking some of it. Some of it just selling in smaller bags because few people have enough money to buy that much rice at one time. In India, raising goats, fish pond is a way that people can earn money and also put more food on the table. So even a fish pond needs some capital to get started. You have to dig the
sure.
pond. There may be some chemicals involved. So that's how we help people get started. A wide array of things, people, small cooking businesses, food businesses, shoe repair, you name it. We see people doing it.
It's really amazing, and you know, you talk about the it's all about the children. It's this need. I mean, the one thing you can count on from the community you're addressing is that if people do become aware of your program and want to be part of it and want to benefit from it, you can be pretty certain they're going to be pretty driven, right?
Oh yeah. I mean, it people are, you know, one thing, and I've traveled to many villages all over the developing world where poverty is in. And everybody wants the same thing. They want a better life for their children. I'm privileged enough to live in a nice home in New York City. You know, our lives, my wife and I, it's all about how do we make a good life for our children. And I meet women in Guatemala or Honduras or India. We don't even speak the same language, but we're all after the same thing.
It's well, and it's a better life, right? That's what we're all, a better life for us and our kids and our families and so on. And you know, you might call that upward mobility. The reality is the type of upward mobility we seek here typically is, you know, you live in that nice apartment. I want new carpeting, or I want nicer drapes, or I want a Ferrari instead of a, you know, a Honda, whatever it may be. Those are a lot of the drivers here. Now, I'm generalizing. Of course, there are certain situations where starting a business is driven by a great sense of need as well here in the U.S. But in general, a lot of times we're motivated by that notion of upward mobility to have better things, have more things, whatever it may be. There, it's fundamental existence. It's
yes.
just, it's life and death.
How does it, hey, Jeff and William, do you do anything in the United States or is it all overseas?
Good question. We did work, Trickle Up has been around about 36 years. In the mid-1990s, the organization started doing international work, and someone on the board said, hey, we've got people living in comparable levels of poverty right here in the United States. So we did start a U.S. program. We worked in a number of places across the country, New York, in Appalachia, some Native American reservations in North Dakota, Los Angeles. And we had a lot of success, but we had to make some choices for us as an organization. Where could we be our most effective? And we concluded that as useful and successful as we were in a number of places in the United States, it was more than we could take on. So we really had to make some choices and went back to our roots and said, you know, we started as an international organization. There's over 1 billion people on the planet today who don't have enough food to eat every day, who live on about $1 a day. So we've got to be very focused to help them and focus and clarity about products and what you do and what you don't do is a truism for any business, any organization, as it was for us. So we several years ago, said, let's go back and focus on our roots internationally.
Interesting.
All right, it is indeed. And listen, when we come, William, can you stick with us for another segment or two on Startup Nation Radio? Okay,
sure.
Great. When we come back, I want to roll up the sleeves and go to work and try to extract out of the Trickle Up experience and the wisdom and what you've gained from seeing the model go to work. I want to try to see if we can extract out some things that we might be able to apply to entrepreneurs wanting to start a business, here in the U.S. or anywhere. But not driven out of the same need that your constituency is, but rather someone who wants to start a business, whether it be for a greater sense of pride, make a little extra money, might be a part-time business, might be a full-time business, might be a way to support your family. We're going to see if we can learn some things from what Trickle Up has done and what those people who are benefiting from Trickle Up have done that we can apply to our desires to have a successful business. Stick with us on Startup Nation Radio.
It's Startup Nation on WJR.
Easy to follow instructions on achieving your dream.
By taking action now.
Here's Jeff Sloan.
Back to this edition of Startup Nation Radio. Great show. Amazing. We're learning about how the power of entrepreneurship is being put to work in ways you can't even imagine. Saving lives, helping lives, improving lives, helping families and communities at large as a result of empowering entrepreneurship as a way to achieve good for people. So, Norm Pappas, welcome back.
Yes, thank you.
Good to have you. And we've got William Abrams from the organization that's doing just that. We've got William Abrams from Trickle Up. William, what is the success rate? I mean, this is a great mission. It sounds incredible. We asked if it works. You gave us examples of how it's working. I'm curious, though, we have a certain success rate we follow here in the U.S. of business startups and failures. What are you seeing through what you're doing?
We see a very high success rate, 85-90% typically, as measured as people able to get a business up and started. Often diversifying is part of the formula for success, and to keep it going, earn more money, build a better life for their future, save, and so on. So it doesn't work all the time, but we like to think that our success rate is something that any venture capitalist would envy.
I was going to say, 85-90%, statistics range in the U.S., for example, of business failure rates, you might say 40%, let's just be clear, though. It's far worse than a success rate of 85-90%. What do you think, what are some of the key hallmarks that lead you to believe why an 85-90% success rate can be achieved when the circumstances are about as tough as they could ever be?
Mm-hmm.
And resources are as limited as they could ever be. How can this work?
I think the most important factor for success for us is simply the determination of the women that we're working with. No doubt about it, the resources we bring to it, business training, small grants to help people get some capital to get started, are really important. But at the end of the day, it's about the drive and determination of people, to get through the inevitable problems. Every business can go through setbacks, a business cycle. In our businesses, often weather has a huge influence. And it's really about determination. You were talking before about the parallels between what we do working with our entrepreneurs in the poorest places on earth and the kinds of businesses that your listeners are involved in. And one of the things that's always struck me, I've been at Trickle Up almost 10 years and came from a career in the private sector, is the parallels. And there are certain things that are true for any business. You got to be clear. Is there a market need for your product? So, for example, a woman in West Africa who might just be starting a small stand trading rice or vegetables or dried fish in a marketplace, part of what they do to get started is we say, go walk around the marketplace and count how many dried fish sellers there are. Do you think there's need for another one? So very simple techniques, nothing fancy, no fancy market research, but make sure there's demand for your product. So that's a key for success. Having a plan is another one, because you've got to not just think about today, but think about the future. And the cyclicality of life and the risks of different seasons and things are quite different in poor parts of the world, where people can go for months before the harvest when there's very little work, very little money. People often go hungry. They can't have three meals a day or sometimes two meals a day, or they have to migrate somewhere else to work. So you have to think ahead. You have to have a plan for good times and hard times and have a strategy for that. One of the reasons that we think we're successful is, and one of the things that is true for businesses, all types, a trickle-up business or rising business in Silicon Valley, is you better have good accounting. So part of what we're doing, working with people who have very little education, but we have different ways to help people keep track of their costs and so on, it's essential. So if you don't have accounting, your business won't succeed, and trickle-up businesses, simple, modest businesses, raising goats, I can go ask any woman that I meet, what's your working capital? How much was your revenue last year? What do you buy a goat at, and then after you fatten it and raise it for 6 months, what are you going to be able to sell it at? What are market conditions? They all know the answer.
Well, and I think this brings up a really interesting area of discussion, because I would imagine that there's going to be a strong temptation from the people you're dealing with to, let's say that you have one goat to start and you raise this goat. I mean, this is very simplistic, but, and then you sell the goat.
Right.
The temptation would be to take the X number of dollars or the equivalent of buy food. You spend the money on your personal enrichment with no perspective or forethought to, I'm going to reinvest that money into my business and make it grow.
Yes, absolutely true. Very important insight. And part of what we do is people have to change their mental view, their time horizon, and say, okay, if I'm patient and if I wait, I will have a much better return, but it may take 6 months. So typically when we meet people, their main thought every single day is, how am I going to have enough food for dinner tonight, either growing food or buying food? So you've got to be able to shift people's mental timeline, mental horizon from today to the future, because they're going to be better off in the future, and shifting them from consumption to investment, or in proportion. You still have to eat. So people have to make tough choices, and they got to spend more time. Women have to get up earlier because they still have obligations, taking care of the family, the household. Many are working, often farming on other people's lands, or if they have a small plot. So, you know, it really is part of the training, and then people seeing success around them, saying, you know what, if I save more, if I invest in my business, I'm going to be better off in the long term. Some of that relates to how we think about what kind of businesses are going to work out for people the best. So you want something that's going to be cash positive in a reasonable period of time, that doesn't require a huge amount of capital, that isn't terribly complex, a business you can get into fairly easily, and you can see a return in sometimes a couple of months or 6 months, but you can't be measured in years. That might be different from a business.
William, how many employees do you have, and how many donors do you have?
We have 35 employees in four offices. So we have about half of them are here in New York. And then we have offices in India, Guatemala, and Burkina Faso in West Africa. Because the way we do our business, or our business model, is working through local nonprofits or NGOs, non-government organizations in each region. So there are our distributors, our franchisees would be the analogy, and we bring our methodology, our quality control standards. We're bringing resources, money to get people that they can we use for training and give people seed capital. So we work through a network of about 25 local partner agencies. The Indian agencies are all Indian, staffed by Indians, and so on. So that's how we built a very efficient model with a small staff here. I mean, think about the numbers. 35 people can help start 8 to 10,000 businesses a year.
That's incredible. That's really powerful. Yeah. Incredible. William, I have a question, too, going back to, you know, kind of understanding how and why this works so well, 85, 90% success rate. You touched on people around them with models of people around others who might be thinking about doing this or wanting to do this or are starting to do this program under Trickle Up. This notion of creating a culture, you know, that I'm sure that's devoid by inherently anyway, you know, that they're not thinking about, you know, ways to reinvest dollars earned through a business naturally. They don't have examples around them of that working. You know, we talk about why Silicon Valley. Well, it started with one company of success that then inspired others and, you know, provide an example of success that others could model and follow. You don't have that going on there. When we come back from this break, I'd love to talk about the importance of creating this culture, how, if and how, and I'm sure you are focused on that to some degree, and using examples of success as models and inspiration to others to get them pointed in the right direction. So we'll come back and we'll talk about that right after this break on Startup Nation Radio.
It's Startup Nation on News Talk 760 WJR. Here's Jeff Sloan.
Okay, welcome back to Startup Nation Radio. Norm Pappas, thanks again for joining us on this edition as a co-host on the show. Good to
My
have
pleasure. You.
Good to have you. Interesting stuff, huh, Norm?
Yeah.
If
great
I said
work.
Norm, if I said to you business success rate for startup businesses 85-90%, you'd say no way.
Yep, pretty amazing.
Pretty amazing, and so would I. What if I said this? Startup success rate, 85-90% in an area where people are making about a dollar a day otherwise and don't have any formal education, are literally, you know, looking for their next meal, have no business training, no business culture, no knowledge, no understanding of business. 85-90% rate under those conditions, what do you say?
I'd say it's pretty impactful.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Well, William Abrams, to your credit, you're leading an organization called Trickle Up that's doing this great work around the world and achieving those kinds of success rates, changing people's lives. Did you say 8 to 10,000 a year?
Yes.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Has any business broken out? I'm just curious. This is more of a kind of an interesting subject matter, but it's not fundamental to the mission, obviously. But has any business broken out and actually become, you know, a really exciting enterprise that's growing?
Sometimes. I mean, we I don't overpromise. And when I look at a trickle-up business and I see someone who can expand and hire one or more non-family members, then I'm going, good success here. You know,
yeah.
We've moved it beyond. So often the husband will get involved in the build business, but if they could hire somebody else, that's a real great sign of success. But I've met people. I met a woman in Honduras a number of years ago who started with a very simple business making fried dough, snacks, plantains and things. And she was amazing, and by the time I met her, she actually had a small factory. She had gotten an order from the local school. She went and got the necessary health certificates from the local government, had bought sort of more industrial-scale, commercial-scale cooking equipment, and had fancy labels designed. And one of the most amazing things, I'll never forget this, from that meeting is we're talking, and it's a great interview, and then phone rings. And she pauses, excuse me, can I take the call? I said, of course. And she's on the phone, Spanish for a few minutes, and says, well, that was someone just calling in an order. Mm. You know, I just got this phone about a month ago, and would you believe it? People now call me for orders. You know, I just, of course, we would just take a phone for granted, but that was a huge business builder for her. But as I say, we look for success. Can people keep the business going? Can they diversify so maybe they have a little bit different business in a different season?
Yeah.
Can they move up the value chain so people who are starting with a really simple, basic kind of commodity business, buying rice in large bags and selling it in small bags, can they start to process it? If they're selling mm-hmm. fruit by the road, as you go from selling mangoes to mango milkshakes, you've moved up a couple of pennies on the value chain.
And so scaling that business a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, there's a lot of subtle things that we see that when I first started, you know, you can't even see the shades of gray, and then over time you begin to understand the nuances of the marketplace in very poor communities. And even in the villages where we work, which are across the board, you know, poor communities, there's levels. So we're starting with people who are on the very margins of their village, their local economy. But there are other people that have a stand going in the marketplace or have some animals. So there's always a role model around. There's always somebody that you can see and say, you know what, they did it, I can do it.
Well,
and again, that's fuel for that aspiration.
That's right. That's right. That's where inspiration comes from, right?
Exactly.
I mean, and so let's talk about that. I mean, do you guys feature, you know, do you, you know, one of the things we do so well here in the U.S., for example, or on Startup Nation Radio, here you go. I mean, what we do is we feature business success stories to inspire and inform others. You know, it's part of that culture in the U.S. That, you know, this notion of upward mobility and wanting to have a better life and wanting to have that Ferrari instead of the Honda, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Do you guys do things like that to promote this throughout the communities?
Yeah, the most important thing we do as part of our program, and every single woman gets involved in this, is in addition to helping individuals start businesses, is form a savings group. So it's a group of 15 women. They're meeting once a week. They start saving small amounts. Sometimes it's 25 cents or 50 cents. And that becomes their common treasury. And then they start to loan to each other. So that's the next source of expansion capital. Or sometimes people have a family emergency. Somebody got sick. They need money to go to the doctor. If they don't have a place to get a loan easily, then they might sell their assets, sell their loom, sell their cow, and then the business is over. So giving people those kinds of resources is important as a financial tool. But the other piece of that is peer support. Other people are in the same boat I'm in. They're making it work. I can make it work. I help them when they got troubles, when they're facing problems. They help me. So, you know, the kind of thing of kind of mutual support, I imagine some of what people get from your radio program or people are in entrepreneur groups. This is tough, hard work, right? And you got to have some people to listen, to give advice, let you cry on the shoulders sometimes.
Yep, yep, commiserate, yep.
That's true everywhere, I find.
Yeah. You know what? There's 8 to 10,000 times a year you're doing this, 36 years.
Yeah.
I mean, what's that number out there that...
You know, we ought to have better records, but it's a lot. And, you know, it's in the hundreds of thousands. And sometimes I have a fantasy that whenever I retire from this, I'm going to go out and collect up all the stories, and I'm going to write a business advice book called Trickle Up Wisdom, the lessons from, 500,000 entrepreneurs in some of the world's toughest places. Because
that'd be a great book.
It would be a great book. And actually, one of the things that struck me in listening to you talk about all this is that, and it's something we inherently believe and we always talk about here at Startup Nation, and that is this. Business is basically simple. The principles are basically simple.
Absolutely.
The execution's the hard part. Having a little bit of luck and timing is also a factor, that you can't control. But business is, you talked about your savings and loan that you're creating there.
Right.
That was born out of a need. It makes such sense, and you talk about creating awareness. You talk about scaling a business. There it is. It's all playing out down at the most simplistic level. The principles are all the same.
Yep.
Buy low, sell high, things like that. I mean, those are business fundamentals.
Mind the store, mind your inventory, keep good records, good business records, good accounting.
Good accounting, right.
The customer, pay attention to your customers. Part of what will help people learn if they're going to be in a business having a food stand or something is customer relations, how to smile at people, how to say thank you. A woman I met in Mali in West Africa whose kind of competitive advantage was she had a big umbrella, like you'd see on a hot dog stand or something, over her stand. And this is in the town of Timbuktu, the legendary town of Timbuktu, where in the summer it gets up to about 125 degrees. So having an umbrella, and then she had a jug of cold water and a chair. So her customers could come and get out of the sun and get a drink and sit and gossip or talk a little bit. And that gave her a competitive advantage over other women who were selling similar kinds of things. She was selling mangoes and spinach and salt and potatoes. And there were other people in the marketplace or in the town. But that's what made her different. So one of the great lessons of business is what's your competitive advantage?
Sure.
For her, it was an umbrella.
Sure. Incredible. William Abrams, it's got to be pretty easy for you to get up out of bed in the morning and go to work. Go to work,
sure,
quote unquote. I mean, you got to feel amazing about what you're achieving.
Well, it's great work, and the thing that inspires me the most is when I'm able to go out a couple of times a year and visit women. I just came back from India. I met a group of women who had actually finished our program about a year earlier, so I was interested in what happens, what's the long-term success look like. So these were a group of women who were all growing hot chilies, hot peppers, and they were doing well. And then they hooked up with a local trader who came in and bought basically their entire harvest. And then he took it to market and sold it to bigger towns. So it was a win-win for everybody. They got good value. They didn't have to figure out how to get it to market or take the risk of the marketplace. Great. And by the way, if you go to the Trickle Up website, trickleup.org, and go to our blog, you can read my story. I wrote it up called The Chili Farmers of ECMA. Amazing. So that's what's inspiring. It's hard work. We have a good success record, but you don't hit it out of the park every time. Different people have different struggles. Our work is enabled by people who support us with donations, individuals, companies, foundations, some governments. So, it's very important. And one of the amazing things that I found in doing this work is how generous people are and how generous Americans are and all the people who sometimes send us $18. We have people who send us $180,000, but that contribution is meaningful to each of them. And I talk to people, and they understand, they want to help other people in the world, and they really love the idea of funding entrepreneurs, even the basic things, that the kind of basic businesses that we do.
Absolutely, and they can learn about how. I mean, 'tis the season of giving, right? So
this is a good time.
This is a good time. TrickleUp.org is where they can learn all about how to be part of this.
Exactly.
I think the book should be Trickle Up's Amazing Stories.
Thank you. That's a good title.
It is. William, one last thing before we let you go. How has it changed you? We've talked about the impact of this. You came from for people in that you're the 8 to 10,000 businesses you're starting every year, those lives that you affect. But you came from the for-profit world, gave yourself to the nonprofit world. How have you changed?
Wow, that's a great question. I think it's made me more humble. Made me really appreciate the privilege I had, the good luck to be born in this country, to be healthy, never to have to worry about a meal, or worry about my education. My parents were able to put myself and my brothers through college, likewise my wife. And so you really, I always appreciated what I had simply by the luck of being born in this country, but now I really appreciate it. And the other side of that is seeing the great commonality that old people around the world share. They want a better life. They want a better life for their children. And they are willing to work unbelievably hard to make that happen. And I think it's the headlines can be very depressing. It's a difficult, messy world. But when you meet the people we get to meet who are able to help, and also meet the people who are generous enough and kind enough to help us help them, it really gives you hope for the future.
It's incredible. Incredible. Listen, Norm, I'm not going to say anymore. What about you? There it is.
Yeah.
There it is. William Abrams, thank you so much for being part of the show and sharing your stories and your wisdom and your inspiration. We really thank you.
Thank you.
And
we wish to talk with you guys today.
Wish you great luck. We're going to continue to follow the story. Norm, thanks for being on the show. Great stuff, huh, Norm?
Yeah, boy. Keep up the good work, William. Yes, great to be listening to this great success.
There it is, the power of entrepreneurship playing out right in front of your eyes. Hey, listen, you can put it to work for you, too. And you know what? You should, right here in the great U.S. of A. Startup Nation Radio will be back with you next week. Thanks for being on listening to the show this week.
I'm in almost every school bus and classroom. I go to school with your children. We say the Pledge of Allegiance together. You've seen me around the neighborhood, and you've told me I'm a pretty good kid. Well, I'm one out of every four children in America, and I'm struggling with hunger. This problem is closer than you think. My teacher tells me we could grow up and be whatever we want. I want to grow up and be someone who doesn't go to bed hungry. There's enough food in this country to feed everyone. Please visit feedingamerica.org today and find your local food bank for ways to help. Every dollar you donate helps provide 7 meals for kids like me, quietly struggling with hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The next chief of surgery, the next best-selling author, the next rookie of the year. When you give children the right opportunities, they can do amazing things, and the United Way for Southeastern Michigan is doing just that. Every dollar you give helps make sure kids can live up to their potential with the right education, access to basic needs, and livable income for their families. It's simple. The Detroit of tomorrow starts with a donation today. To give, visit iliveunited.org. The United Way for Southeastern Michigan. Let's make greater Detroit greater.
760 WJR. The most interesting people in the world talk to Frank Beckman.
Dr. Ben Carson, what would you say the likelihood is right now that you're going to run for president in 2016?
Well, I think it's more likely than not.
What would drive you more than anything else to run right now?
The people. You know, I am really listening to the voices of the people, and they seem to be getting progressively louder.
Frank Beckman, late mornings at 9 on WJR. The great voice of the Great Lakes, WJR, Detroit.